Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the abuse excuse when we come back. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Law, and how many laws has our state and federal government given us in our secular government? Well, you know, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. And the state, at last count, has given us more than 2.5 million laws. Now, the Apostle Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men, and he said that in Acts 5, verse 29. And our Congress has said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And our Supreme Court has said that there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country, and that is loyalty to God. And they said that in Seeger versus United States. Now, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty Himself. The Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use those laws against government intrusion into our God-given rights is a right, a duty, and an obligation that we owe to ourselves and to our families and our society. And here at the law school, we teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties for their violation. Now, why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? You know, the First Amendment is the gateway to the Second Amendment and to your whole Bill of Rights. Now, the law of God may be old, but it is not old-fashioned, and it is very relevant to our lives and to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. Just call 417-273-4967 and ask for one. That number again is 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Why don't you do it right now before you forget. All right, we're reviewing the book. Remember, it's called The Abuse Excuse. And he has a number of articles in here, probably, I'm going to guess, 100, might be 80, you know, something like that. Little short stories, about two or three pages, easy to read because of that. I always like short, direct paragraphs because, you know, with a short, direct brain like mine and not being the sharpest marble in the drawer, I don't get strung out, you know, for hours on end trying to arrive at the end of a 30-page chapter. These chapters are only about two, three, four pages each. And so for a little short, shallow mind like mine, I can get to the end of each one of these thoughts. And Dershowitz has a good, sharp mind, and I like that. And he raises a number of issues, and I can't cover all of the different issues that he's raising here, but I'm going to hit a couple of three more. And he talks about Super Bowl Sunday. It's Super Sunday Syndrome on page 117 as an abuse excuse. Listen to this. He says, so now it's football that causes violence against women, especially on Super Bowl Sunday. Last year, it was pornography. A century ago, the villain was Demon Rum. So maybe next year it will be dirty jokes, or slackened church attendance, or listening to Pat Buchanan. Now, violence against women is a serious problem throughout the world, and its causes are as complex and as varied as human nature itself. But there are zealots out there who are using the tragedy of battered women to promote their own ideological agendas and personal preferences. So on the eve of Super Bowl Sunday, several self-proclaimed women's advocates declared that there was a direct relationship between men watching the Super Bowl and men beating up their wives or their girlfriends. Characterizing Super Bowl Sunday as a day of dread for women, these zealots issued the following warning to women who were at risk. It said, don't remain alone with him during the game. They cited data which they claimed supported the conclusion that Super Bowl Sunday was the biggest day of the year for violence against women, unquote. Now, the data included a study of the relationship between football and violence against women that purported to show a 40% increase in such violence after games won by the Washington Redskins. The Boston Globe reported that women's shelters and hotlines are flooded with more calls from victims on Super Bowl Sunday than any other day of the year, unquote. It was a frightening story, And it was highlighted all over the nation, on television, in newspapers, and on radio talk shows. Now, there's only one problem. That story is entirely false. There is absolutely no reliable data whatsoever to support any relationship between men watching football and beating up on women. And there is no data confirming the hyperbolic claim that Super Bowl Sunday is any more dangerous for women than any other day of the year. So I put that paragraph in brackets. Now, here's Alan Dershowitz. Now, Dershowitz is no lightweight. See, we're not talking about Joe Sixpack over here in the halls of the courthouse in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dershowitz now practices before the Supreme Court. He's a Harvard Law School professor. I have to apologize for him. He's a radical, liberal dingbat. No offense, Mr. Dershowitz, just telling it like it is. But that doesn't mean the guy's dumb. And so when I read his article here, I say to myself, well, now I heard that story. I read that story somewhere, that Super Bowl Sunday was the most dangerous day of the year, and I believed it. You know, to my folly, I read the newspapers. Will Rogers said, hell, all I know is what I read in the papers. And I'm like everybody else, you know, when I read a story in the paper, I tend to believe it. Especially if it's scientific, you know, especially if it's a study or a poll. You know these polls that come out? Now, the truth of the matter is these polls are conducted by the Democrats and they're conducted by the Republicans. And so the Republicans have their polling service. And then when they conduct a poll, if they're behind, they put the best possible light on it. It's called spin, also known as lies. You know, they just lie about it. And then the Democrats do the same thing. See? And if they're a little bit ahead, they put the best possible spin on it to make you believe that they can't lose. And the Republicans put the spin on it. Well, we're a little behind, but we're coming up fast. See? And so we know, all of us know, that these polls are as phony as $3 bills. But God, aren't they persuasive? And when you're reading your newspaper, you know, and there's a scientific article or a story over here, the sun is shrinking. Hell, I don't know if the sun is expanding or shrinking or not. When was the last time you conducted any scientific studies on the sun? I mean, you know, if you're like me, I never looked at the sun. I don't know. All I know is what I read in the papers. So every once in a while, I read that scientific piece in my ads, and I say, did you know the sun is shrinking by 5 feet an hour? Now, that's probably a pretty accurate scientific fact. I mean, you know, we've been spending millions of dollars supporting these, professors in colleges and universities, and in their studies, you know, the government, you know, is constantly funding these people. And I would presume that that's probably true, accurate, and correct. It may be 4 feet an hour or 9 feet an hour, or, you know, I don't know, the hell, but it's shrinking. You know, that's the conclusion they came to. It's shrinking. All right, now, but I remember when I went to high school, they had these textbooks, you know, glossy textbooks, you know, put out by scientists that said the dinosaurs died 65 million years ago. Now, if the sun is shrinking by 5 feet an hour, and if Charles Lyell's uniformitarianism is true, well, then, you know, just 20 million years ago, one-third of the distance back to 65 million years ago, just 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter. Just do the arithmetic, and that'll tell you the answer. Whereas one guy sent me a letter, and he corrected me about diameter and radius, and he said, your numbers are off. I'll double it to 40 million. But the point is that, you know, scientists don't know when the dinosaurs died out. And if the sun shrinking 5 feet an hour story is true, then the dinosaurs died out something less than 20 million years ago. So either the dinosaur scientists are lying to us or the sun scientists are lying to us, but they both can't be right. That's what the bottom line is. Well, now, if one of them's wrong and they're constantly teaching us this evolutionary crap in our schools over here, well, then who in the hell can you believe? And what basis do you have for believing either one? You and I don't study dinosaur bones, and we're not out here measuring the sun's demise. So all we know is hearsay evidence. Now, Alan Dershowitz over here, Noah, is a paid professional. And he understands hearsay evidence. And he's a researcher. And he went out and did some research and found out that this was a lie. Now, I believe this lie, Mr. Dershowitz, to my shame. And I should have known better, you know. But I really didn't care whether the most dangerous day in the year was Super Bowl Sunday or not. I never crossed my mind, never really cared much about it one way or the other. I read the stories. I've heard that for I don't know, it seems like all my life, but I don't know that that's the case, and that's because the Super Bowl has only been around for 40 years, so it hasn't even been around all my life. But I've heard, you know, that Super Bowl Sunday is a dangerous year. And here's a citation. I've read it. I've heard it. I've seen it, and I know that what he's telling me here is correct. Now, for example, an author of the study cited in support of the 40% increase said, "That's not what we found at all." Now, I'm going to underline that because I reported this to you the other day. I have over my career given probably 100 interviews to newspaper reporters, television and radio reporters. And I'm here to tell you that with very few exceptions, when I read that story, when I watch that television clip, when I hear the story on the radio, I got to ask myself, who in the hell told that guy that? That isn't what I said. That's not what I believe. That's not what I teach here. But that's what they report. And, of course, you believe whatever the reporter is reporting. And especially when you get a direct citation from me. You know, they're quoting directly from me. And Mr. Gordon said, and then they make this quotation. Listen to this. Dershowitz called the guy and said, well, let me ask you this. And the guy that wrote the book said, I didn't say that. All right, now, so much for accuracy in reporting. When you listen to Katie Couric on the news, you want to take whatever that woman says with a grain of salt. When you're listening to Brian Williams and Charlie Rose, what those guys tell you is just trash. Sorry, Charlie, but that's just the way life is. And that's because all of these reporters are sensationalizing their story. And so they have an agenda, and they're trying to persuade you that Super Bowl Sunday is the most dangerous day of the year for women, and by God, they're going to do it. That's their agenda, that's their job, that's their mission, and by God, they're going to accomplish that goal. And when you walk out of here, you're going to absolutely believe Super Bowl Sunday. If any woman in America survives Super Bowl Sunday, it's a miracle. All right, let me read you this again. For example, an author of the study cited in support of the 40% increase said that's not what we found at all. The psychologist who was quoted as saying that shelters get the most complaints of domestic violence on Super Bowl Sunday denied that conclusion. I never said that. I don't know that to be true. Unquote. The Boston Globe reporter who said that hotlines are flooded with more calls on Super Bowl Sunday than any other day of the year acknowledged that she never saw any report supporting that conclusion. But instead, the reporter relied on hearsay, a hearsay account provided her by an advocacy group which could not back it up. Now, you think maybe we have one of these myth things here, asked the alleged authority on whom the advocacy group was relying. All right. Now, Alan Dershowitz comes along here and he says, now, hey, wait a minute, hang on a second. Just because you read this in the Boston Globe and just because this newspaper reporter reported it doesn't mean that it's true, even though the reporter says, here's a direct quotation from the psychologist who wrote the story, wrote the book. No. Now, the advocacy group, you know, this is the Women Against Abusive Husbands or whatever the group is called over here. Those people have an agenda. And their agenda is to show that all men are brute beasts and they need to be locked up for their own protection, and especially the protection of women. All right, now, that's patently false, just absolutely patently false. But that's their mission, that's their goal, and they have a reason for doing that. That's the way they make their money. It's like the law enforcement growth industry. It's like the prison industry. It's like your city council and the chief of police coming in to report on crime in the city. They all have an agenda. They all have a reason. They're all making money off of crime. And these advocacy groups, the last thing they want to see is for men to quit beating up on women because it would take away their argument. The last thing that the anti-abortion and the abortion people want is a solution to the abortion problem. Neither side wants a solution. Let me explain it to you. An advocacy group makes money off of a certain segment of the population who donate money to that group or organization to promote that very narrow ideological concern. Let's take guns as an illustration. The gun grabbers in Washington initiate legislation. Now, let's say to abolish AK-47s. Now, immediately, this evokes a reaction in all of the gun owners. And there's advocacy groups like the National Rifle Association. So the National Rifle Association, the advocacy group, they jump on the bandwagon, send out letters to their 2 or 3 million supporters and say, my God, look what Dianne Feinstein is doing with Barbara Boxer. Try to grab your AK-47. Send us $50 today so that we can effectively derail this gun grabber from California. Okay, now that's their appeal. And so out of the millions of people that belong to the National Rifle Association, they still sit down, not all of them, but, you know, a big number of them, a million of them, half a million, and write a check for $50 or $100. Millions of dollars flow in to this advocacy group. All right? See how that works? Now, do you think the National Rifle Association wants a solution to an end to the gun grabbing? No. God, it would cut off their funds. It's like finding a cure for polio. It destroyed the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. But they learned from that. My God, last thing we want is a cure. Treatments, yes, but cures, no. That's why you got 14 cures to cancer and none of them used. All right, now let's try it the other way around. Now, the National Rifle Association elects George Bush for president, and so they come along and they say, what we need to do is to abolish a bunch of these gun registration or gun laws over here or whatever. And so the gun grabbers, they send out their appeal to their organization, see, or their organizations, plural, and they say, oh, my God, look at what these gun maniacs are trying to do. They're trying to abolish all regulation of guns. and put guns in the hands of six-year-olds in public schools so they can kill their teachers in kindergarten. Send $50 today so that we can protect your child from being murdered in kindergarten. And so that constituency of people, you know, they send their $50 donations into their groups and advocacy people. Now, my God, do they want a solution to the gun problem? No. My God, if there was ever peace, ever a conclusion arrived at, you know, a balance between gun ownership and regulation, if a balance was ever struck by the two sides, why, all of these advocacy groups would be out of business, like the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. All right, so keep in mind that anytime you read something in the paper over here, ask yourself, well, who in the hell's getting paid for this? Who's making money off of this? And that'll give you some. Now, the newspaper reporter, see, newspaper reporters, they've got their own little thing in life. A newspaper reporter never reports the truth because the truth isn't dramatic. The truth never, look, Boy Scout helps old lady across the street. That's the truth. Who in the hell wants to read a story about Boy Scouts helping blind old ladies cross the street? Here's, try another headline. Boy Scout rapes old lady after helping her across the street. God, now that's a story. That's drama. That's off the wall. That's kinky. All right, now that's got violence, sex, drama. And it brings into disrepute, you know, ill repute, the Boy Scouts of America, doesn't it? Hey, now we can attack this Puritan bunch of fanatics over here and show that, hey, they're not all pure red, white, and blue. You know, some of them are rapists. All right, now ask yourself, what in the hell is this reporter trying to convince me of? Because I'm here to tell you that I've been reported on many, many, many times. And sometimes the reports are true, sometimes they're half true, sometimes they're bald-faced lies. And they're especially bald-faced lies when the newspaper reporter got it right out of my mouth. Now, when they rely upon hearsay from one of my detractors, kind of like Alan Dershowitz here, you know, I mean, there are people that love him and people that hate him. And I'm kind of in the middle. I don't love or hate the guy one way or the other. I just disagree with a lot of his conclusions. But I like his mind because he's raising some good issues here, and this is a dynamite issue. Bringing to the fore this lie and saying, hey, listen, this is an abuse excuse, and there's a reason for it. I think he's doing a great public service. And I admire him for it. Now, there are many myth things out there, he goes on to say, when it comes to data that purports to support the agendas of zealots. Another such myth is the alleged link between pornography and violence against women. There is absolutely no reliable data that supports any connection between watching a sexually explicit movie and beating or raping women. I put a bracket around that one also. Now, you see, I have always assumed that there is such a link. Dershowitz says, well, not that we have been able to find yet. See, he may be right about that. I don't know. I'm sitting here believing that pornography probably is bad for us. I don't know about Dershowitz, but I would imagine he would probably say, I think that pornography is bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil, and I don't look at it, and I don't watch it, and I don't think that it's good for anybody. But I'm opposed to outlawing it because it's censorship. That's the point that I made the other day. I agree with him to that degree. You and I out here need to sit down and think about this now for a minute, because if we, in our zealousy, our zeal, not zealousy, but zeal, if we go out here and we shut down people that we disagree with, well, then can't those people band together with the majority and shut us down? I mean, that's the bottom line. Now, if we don't want to be shut down, then we need to shut up about trying to shut somebody else down, because they despise our views concerning the Bible just as much as we despise their views concerning pornography. And there's more of them that hate the Scripture than those of us that hate pornography. Always tuck that one away in your heart. There's more of those guys than there are of us guys. So if you're an advocate of the Ten Commandments and the Scripture and the Bible, maybe we better not throw rocks while we're living in our own glass house. That's the bottom line. And he goes on, he says, there may be some connection between watching violent films and committing violence, or between watching sex films and having sex attitudes or sexist attitudes. But there is no documented connection between watching sexual films and committing violence. And yet the myth persists. And indeed it is deliberately disseminated by those whose agenda is to censor sexually explicit material because they don't like it. And they arbitrarily define pornography to fit precisely into the category of images that they most despise. And then they set out to prove by pseudoscience that pornography so defined causes rape. And it's patently false. All right, so good point, Mr. Dershowitz. I got to concede that's a good point. And you've got a convert here, because now I'm gonna back off and I'm gonna say, well, okay, because I don't have any evidence that it does. All I'm sitting here saying is that there's advocacy groups out here claiming that sexually explicit films cause rape and violence, and they cite, you know, science and say, well, here's what science, I believed it. Dershowitz comes back and says, wait a minute, it ain't so. So at least there's a controversy there, and I don't know which side is which. I'm opposed to pornography, and I'm not going to participate in it. But if you want to participate in pornography, be aware of the fact that it violates the law of God, and there is a punishment for it. There's recompense at a point in time. I don't know just when, but there'll be a recompense for it. So you ought to be alerted to that fact. Now, the time has come to stop pandering to zealots who misuse social science to serve their own personal likes and dislikes, such as booze, violence, rape, abortion, pornography, crime. I mean, all of these people make money off of their advocacy, either for it or against it. They're for it or they're against it. The guys that are selling pornography, they've got a vested interest in it. And the people over here that are opposed to pornography, they've got a vested interest in it. These people are making money off of it, and they're making money off of people like you and me. And they're trying to persuade us to join them in their cause. And then, of course, you know, send your donations too. Now, you may be the guy that says, yeah, but I don't send my donations too. Yeah, but millions of other people do. And it's just a numbers game. You know, if you've got the National Rifle Association, and let's say you've got a million members, and they send out a letter to their million members and say, send us $50, it is true that the whole 1 million people will not send them $50, but 100,000 will. That's 10%. They're just playing a numbers game. And so if they got 50,000 over here, let's just do a little arithmetic here, 50,000 times 100,000, well, that equals $3.695 billion, you know. If the National Rifle Association could get 100,000 people to send them $50 each, let me try it the other way. Sounds like too much money. So let's try 100,000 times $50 each. Yeah, three too many zeros. That's $5 million. It's not $5 billion. That's I got too many zeros in my numbers here. But it's $5 million. You know, so every time the NRA wants to raise $5 million, they send out a letter. But they got to have a cause. They got to have something that's in the news. They got to have Dianne Feinstein or Ted Kennedy, the gun grabbers, trying to pass some legislation here that's going to take away their AK-47s. Now, I'm opposed to the gun grabbers. And I think that you people ought to have your Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. And God love you, and I want you to have your guns. But, you know, the people that are opposed to guns have a point. And it's based upon the same irresponsible behavior as the gun grabbers are trying to apply to us. And that is, people who have guns are not always qualified, competent, or capable to have them. Not every 16-year-old kid is competent and capable of handling an automobile. And not every 16-year-old kid is competent and capable of handling a firearm. And they need to be taught. Now, my dad taught me how to drive a car. My dad taught me how to use a gun. And we Americans are not teaching our children how to use guns or cars. We rely upon the public schools to teach them how to drive. But the public schools have an agenda, and they're not teaching your children how to use firearms. I told you the other day, hell, when I was a kid, I don't know of any of my circle of friends when I was in high school that did not have a gun. On the other hand, I don't know of any of my circle of friends that ever shot anybody, ever murdered anybody, or ever had a problem with a firearm. You know, a gun is like an automobile. You know, sometimes there are accidents. But, you know, I've had two traffic accidents. And I thought I knew how to drive a car. I mean, evidently, I didn't. Both of them before I was 20 years old. That's why I've said many times, I don't think 16-year-old kids ought to have automobiles. I think 16-year-old kids ought to be trained to drive. I don't think they ought to have automobiles. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors and publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and the Law School, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the book. It's called The Abuse Excuse, The Abuse Excuse, and Other Cop-Outs, Sob Stories, and Evasions of Responsibility. It's written by Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law professor up in Massachusetts. Now, he goes on to say, the time has come to stop pandering to these zealots who misuse social science to serve their own personal likes and dislikes. They must be exposed for the dangerous charlatans that they are. Nor are their good intentions or the importance of preventing violence an excuse for sounding false alarms. So let's try to find out what really are the actual causes of violence against women, rather than trying to prove that activities that are disliked by some feminist zealots, whether it be watching football or sexually explicit films, cause violence. Every dollar wasted on pseudoscientific, agenda-driven advocacy research is a dollar that could better be spent on real research that might actually help prevent violence against women. The problem with real scientific research, at least for zealots, is that a genuine scientific researcher cannot be told which way his or her conclusions should come out. The zealots will be afraid that some of their pet myths may be debunked, and that neither the old devil porn nor the new devil football will be shown to cause violence against women. As one social scientist who was misquoted by the zealots about Super Bowl Sunday put it, I hate this. I've devoted 14 years of my life trying to bring to the public's attention the very serious problem of battered women. And when people make crazy statements like this, then the credibility of the whole cause can go right out the window. Let's not allow a few irresponsible zealots to destroy the credibility of an important and serious concern. And all of you women out there ought to thank Alan Dershowitz for bringing that to our attention. It is true that there are people out there who are battering their wives, but it is not necessarily true that Super Bowl Sunday caused it. And so by pandering to these zealots, and I admire Dershowitz because he's a woman's advocate, and he's a liberal, and he takes up these liberal causes, which I don't, but he does. And now he is castigating the very liberals that he is championing their cause for their misdeeds, to his credit. To his credit. Kind of reminds me of John McCain taking on the Republican establishment, and that woman government, Palin, Sarah Palin, taking on the Republican establishment. The Republican Party and the Republican establishment is corrupt. I mean, that's where reality is at, and it needs to be reformed. And I hope that somebody gets in there and reforms it, and no matter who it is. All right, so with that out of the way, let's take on another one over here. Page 121, Wrong Rights. A novel and dangerous vocabulary of rights is being constructed as part of an attempted end run around the Constitution, and it's called victim rights. The right to be protected from pornography, fetus rights, and the right not to be exposed to secular humanism are all manifestations of this new right-wing head fake, which is calculated to deceive the listener into believing that an invocation of governmental power is really an exercise of individual rights. Now, rights, especially constitutional rights, exist in relation to governments. The Bill of Rights and the post-Civil War amendments, which applied most of its provisions to the states, was designed to limit governmental powers by assuring that certain individual rights could not be taken away by government officials. So in the context of criminal prosecutions, it was the criminal defendant who was given the right to be free from unreasonable searches, self-incrimination, double jeopardy, and cruel and unusual punishment, along with excessive bail and other governmental infringements. There is absolutely no provision granting victim rights in the Constitution, and for a very good and for a very simple reason. It is not the government that is seeking to deny the victim any legitimate claim. The victim was assaulted by a private citizen. The government is on the side of the victim and is seeking to punish the defendant. The government is using the police power of the state in the interests of the victim and against the defendant. So the Bill of Rights seeks to strike a balance by granting the defendant certain rights. All right, you got that? It's the government and the victim working together, using the overwhelming police power of the state against an individual to bring him to justice, and he needs to be brought to justice. But 15% of the time, the government and the victim make a mistake, and in rape cases, it's 30%. So let me describe one of these abuses. It's very common in rape cases for the victim to be cunningly coerced into identifying the false perpetrator of the rape at the insistence of the government, in this case, the police. Let me tell you how that works. In a rape case, the victim, a woman, is severely traumatized. As a result of that traumatization, what she tells you isn't necessarily reliable. She is hysterical. She is traumatized. She is upset. She is excited. She's not rational. She's not sitting there calmly and coolly using her mental faculties to arrive at a conclusion. So what the police do, they need to solve this crime, because the crime of rape is a heinous crime, and we need to solve that problem. Everybody wants to find these rapists and punish these rapists and eliminate rape from our society. I mean, hell, everybody's in favor of abolishing rape. So the police use rape in the same way that feminist groups use Super Bowl Sunday. They use it to excite and to advance their agenda. And the police agenda is a protection racket. The police, the government, in this case, are using the protection racket. Now, when the mafia does this, we call it protection racket. When the police do it, we call it law and order. But both of these institutions, the mafia and the police, are making money. They make their living off of taking the money away from the victims. I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, Dershowitz goes on, he says, this is the way the system is supposed to work, in theory. But in practice, the government does not always work in the interest of victims, especially when the victims are themselves poor, unpopular, or powerless. Even middle-class victims are often neglected, inconvenienced, or abused. Understandably, therefore, some victims have banded together to form lobbies seeking for themselves a greater role in the criminal justice system. All right, so now let me continue with my story. So the police now, they're going to side with the victim over here against the perpetrator. Now, we don't know who the perpetrator is. We don't know who the rapist is. So the police ask some questions. Well, how big was he? Well, he was big and he was black. All right. So now that zeroes in on African Americans, right? All right. So all rapists are African Americans. Well, hell, we know that ain't true. But in this case, we're going to zero in on a African American because this victim said that's who it was. You know, sometimes they weren't black. Sometimes the real perpetrator was white, but this woman over here has identified a black man as the perpetrator. Why? Because that's what the police identified. Why? Because they got to find somebody. If they're going to keep up their charade of being a protection racket, finding rapists, then they've got to find a rapist. I don't care who in the hell it is. They're going to find somebody. Now, the police then take a look at the victim's description and the victim's information, and they say, okay, well, listen, based upon this neighborhood and based upon your description, we've got two or three guys in mind. And every single time, it's some guy that's already been convicted for rape in the past. So they go out and they pick up the three guys that they think it is, along with three or four other guys that they know it isn't, and they put them into a lineup. And then they bring this woman in here who's been totally traumatized. This woman doesn't know whether her hind end is border punched. And they say, okay, well, out of these 7, 8, 10 people here, which one do you think it is? And so she looks at him, and she's confused, and she says, well, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, it was pitch black, it was dark, and I don't know. Now, the police over here, you know, listen, they've got an agenda. Their agenda is protection. That's the way they make their money. That's the way they get paid every Friday. And they've got to find a rapist. I mean, look, think of it like this. What if the police could never find any criminals? Would you want to support them? Hell no. So the police are always out here solving crimes. Whether or not the guy that they've got convicted for the crime did it or not is irrelevant. By God, we're going to solve the crime, and we're going to put somebody in prison so that we can perpetuate the myth of, well, the police, you know, are out here on the job. You know, our protection racket over here is much better than the mafia. See, when the mafia guy comes in on say, Monday, and he says, hey, listen, every Wednesday I'm going to come in and pick up $100. That's $400 a month, $100 a week. And by paying me $100 a week, your store is not going to burn down. And you say, well, this is extortion. And the guy says, hey, down the street, did the delicatessen burn? And you say, yeah. And up the street over here, did the cleaning establishment burn? Yeah. Okay. Neither one of them were paying for protection. And they both burn. And the guy says to you, and if you don't pay me the $100 a week on Wednesday, your store is going to burn just like theirs. You want to test it? So you say, well, if I don't want my store to burn, I guess I better pay this guy $100 a week. Now, you call that extortion. Right? Now, your government comes along and they say, well, we call this taxation. then you need to pay this taxation to support the police. And if you don't pay this taxation, your store's going to go out of business. We're not going to issue you a license. We're going to foreclose. We're going to put you in prison. We're going to jail you. We're going to take your business away from you. And they say, do you see the store down the street? He didn't pay his taxes. See that store up the street? He didn't pay his taxes. And if you don't pay your taxes, we're going to put you out of business just like those two stores. Now, when government does that, we call it law and order. We call it civilization. We call it society. When the mafia does it, you call it extortion. Now, you can hang whatever label on there you want to. But you're not voluntarily buying that police protection. You're being compelled to buy that police protection whether you want it or not, like it or lump it. So now you're a victim and you got raped. And so now you come in and you complain about this rape. And so the policeman says, okay, now listen, take a good look at number three over there, because number three fits the description, and number three was just three blocks away. He just lives three blocks away from where you were raped. Like a rapist always rapes in his own neighborhood, huh? And so you look at number three and you say, well, geez, I can't be sure. Now the policeman says to you, the victim, now listen, lady, you came in here and you filed a complaint. Do you know what the penalty is for filing a false police report, lady? Because if you don't identify that guy number three over there, or number six or nine, we don't really give a damn who you identify. But if you don't identify one of these guys, and we think number three is the primary suspect, we're going to charge you with filing a false police report, and that carries a year in jail. You'll be amazed at how many rape victims can sober up. And, by God, that guy number three does look more like the guy that raped me in the pitch black at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Yes, sir. I think you're right, officer. I think that is number three. And so they convict number three. Now they come to number three and they say, okay, you've been positively identified by the victim over there. And if you plead guilty to this, Bob, you know, you can take 5 years, probably be out in 3 years with good behavior, and everything's going to be all right. And if you don't, we'll put you away for 30 years. We'll call you a repeat offender. We'll lock you up over here, and then we'll say you can't control your sexual urges, and we'll put you in for preventive detention, which is effectively life in prison. And so Bob over here, he pleads guilty to a crime he didn't commit. It goes on all the time. I mean, come on, guys. Now, Alan Dershowitz comes along here and he says, now listen, now this isn't Dershowitz's editorial comment. I'm just, you know, putting my editorial comment along with this from my own personal experience and from what I know, and I'm just kind of adding a little bit to this. But Dershowitz wrote a book here and he says, these are abuse excuses. Abuse excuses. And he says, we need to stop that. And he says, these groups that are for victims' rights, you know, the Women's Coalition Against Rape. Well, who in the hell isn't against rape? But the Women's Coalition Against Rape is an activist group which is out here making their money off of victims. And so they're advocating these victim rights, which are as phony as $3 bills. The victim is being victimized by the police in the same way that the perpetrator, or in this case, the lack of perpetrator, the innocent victim, is being victimized by the police. I mean, hell, everybody's being victimized. And that's because it's a protection racket. I'll tell you more about that next time. He says, and these groups have come to be the darlings of prosecutors and politicians. How can any decent citizen resist the emotional importunings of victims? Prosecutors no longer claim to be representing the impersonal government, the same one that takes your hard-earned money and doesn't answer your letters. Now they're the champions of the victims, a group with which every citizen whose home has been burgled or whose pocketbook snatched can identify with. No longer is the policeman denying a suspect his rights by engaging in a questionable search or interrogation. He's helping the victim vindicate his or her rights to retrieve stolen property and to bring the perpetrator to justice. Unfortunately, in rape cases, now that we have DNA testing, we have now found out that 30% of all rape convictions are false. 30%. Damn near one out of every three is false. And every single one of them, the victim in court pointed her finger at the defendant and said, that's the guy that raped me, and 30% of the time it was a damn lie. And she didn't know who it was, but the police helped her memory. Now, the police are very helpful. Legislators and legislatures have also jumped on the victims' rights bandwagon. More than half of our states have enacted victim rights laws. Most of these enactments contain the old wine of law and order legislation, relabeled with the new code words victim rights, and some contain few or no real protections for victims. They simply take rights away from defendants in the name of victims. Others do improve the situations of victims and witnesses by eliminating inconveniences and requiring that the interests of those important participants be taken into account by those who administer the criminal justice system. Now, among the most controversial provisions is the right of the victim or the victim's representatives to appear before the sentencing judge and the parole board and to present a witness impact statement. What this means is that the sentencing authorities are told and shown with emotional and dramatic force how the crime actually affected and continues to affect the victim. It helps to humanize the process somewhat by pitting the person called defendant against the person called victim, but this very humanization carries with it considerable costs. It invites inevitable class and race biases, and when the victim is someone with whom the sentencing authorities can identify with, they're apt to see the crime as more serious and deserving of harsher punishment than when the victim is poor, homeless, unemployed, or a member of an unpopular group. And it's long been true that the nature of the victim has had a demonstrable impact on the severity of the punishment, but the increasing visibility of the victim in the criminal justice process threatens to exacerbate this discrimination. The concept of victim rights is clearly a knife that cuts both ways. Now, the Supreme Court recently ruled by a 5-4 vote that in the context of life or death sentencing decisions, the victim impact statement cuts too deeply against a defendant's constitutional rights, and it has the potential for inflaming the jury in favor of imposing capital punishment. Justice Lewis Powell, writing for the majority, also pointed out that the degree of suffering experienced by the victims and survivors may be wholly unrelated to the blameworthiness of a particular defendant. Notwithstanding the Supreme Court's rebuke of the victim's impact statement in capital cases, the rhetoric of rights is likely to persist in other contexts. Victims of pornography will continue to parade through the streets demanding their right to have the government remove offending material from the bookshelves. Graphic photographs of victims of abortion have become common fare at demonstrations in front of abortion clinics. And religious fundamentalists are declaring themselves victims of secularism or secular humanism, as Judge Brevard Hand called it when he performed an act of legal hocus-pocus by including non-religion under the rubric of a religious establishment within the meaning of the First Amendment. Remember that these right-wingers who are using this new rhetoric of governmental rights in an effort to undercut individual rights are misusing words in a deliberately confusing manner, and the concept of rights in relation to governmental powers is too important a part of our national history to be obscured in the name of a faddish rhetoric that ill suits our national character. I think that that hits the nail pretty much on the point. I agree. Hey, I'm about out of time here again, children. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.